Live on DAZN Worldwide, May 2nd and 3rd, Garcia versus Romero and Canelo versus Skull. Friday from 6 p.m. Eastern, Garcia returns in a history-making Times Square takeover. 24 hours later, Saturday from 7 p.m. Eastern, King Canelo faces undefeated Skull for the undisputed crown. May 2nd and 3rd, a knockout weekend of boxing. Pick one or go all in for only $90, exclusively on DAZN. Buy now at DAZN.com/boxing.
When you golf in Missouri, the courses are so close, you'll spend more time on the fairway than the freeway. Reserve a tee time at the Regal Osage National, designed by the king himself, Arnold Palmer. Take a cart ride on the wild side in the breathtaking surrounds of Payne's Valley, designed by Tiger Woods. And after the back nine, there's still world-class dining and distilleries, shops and spas, museums and more. Find your new golf MO in Missouri. Start planning your golf getaway at visitmo.com.
Robbie. Welcome back. Another day, another hotel. Today.
Wow.
Feels like it's been a lot of hotels, by the way, doesn't it?
Yeah. What's your deal?
Here we go.
When you travel, what are you running from, Kyle?
This is the Hilton Garden Inn from Charlotte, North Carolina. And I got to say, I love North Carolina. So shout out to all of our North Carolina listeners.
Okay, so you're gonna come on here and slander New Orleans, and then you're gonna turn around and treat North Carolina like it's the belle of the ball.
I think when I did my state rankings, I had North Carolina at number 4. That was like my hot take.
Holy cow.
Yeah, oh, it's so good. Do we have any North Carolina listeners out there? Identify yourselves. Welcome back.
I have
back.
Nothing against North Carolina, by the way. I'm just
still sore
from the
sure
aforementioned slander.
No, actually, Robbie's going to make headlines today. Robbie hates North Carolina, loves New Orleans. This is Friends from Work, podcast about all things in the Marvel Cinematic Universe, hosted by me, Kyle Scunwell, and my longtime friend from work, Robbie Earle. Robbie, feels like a lot of stuff's happening this week, which has been really fun. Obviously, we're going to get into X-Men 97, Episode 9. I don't know if you saw, there were some Fantastic Four casting confirmations.
Yeah.
I can't even pronounce the names, but the guy who played Richard Jewell is going to be in it in some role, which is super strange. And then another
Richard
guy.
Richard Jewell.
Yeah. What's his name? Help.
John Malkovich?
No, he's also in it. Okay, so there's three casting rumors. Here we go. We're both going to look at our phones. Give me one second here.
Yeah, because there was another confirmation. The guy from like Game of Thrones.
Yeah, this is bad. So Paul Walter Hauser, the kind of bigger dude.
Uh-huh.
He's going to be in it. And then
John Malkovich.
Okay,
yep.
Which is another strange one, is going to be in it. And then it's what, Ian or – golly, help me out, please. Fantastic Four. Everyone listening right now is just so angry. Is it Ian? Yes, we didn't have much time to prepare, okay? It's what? It's 9 o'clock on a Friday morning. I got to go to work soon.
It's look, all we're here to do is just talk about –
oh my gosh, this is so bad.
The things that have happened that we appreciate. This is not a news service.
Ralph Ineson. Ineson? That's who's going to be playing Galactus. Ralph Ineson.
Oh, yes. Okay, yeah.
Which
that's
kind of an off-the-wall cast for all these people now. So they're either going to take – I mean, they're taking a massive swing. It's either going to be unbelievable or – woo, here we go.
Yeah, that's who I'm talking about from Game of Thrones, by the way.
Mm-hmm. He also was a Ravager pilot in the first Guardians of the Galaxy, so one of these double casting
people. Oh, yeah, that makes sense.
But that's going on.
I feel like that's good casting, by the way. I wanted to say briefly the Javier Bardem rumor that was going around for a while about Gladiator bothered me a bit, not because I think he would do a poor job. I think he would kill it, but because he's an actor that I feel like they would want to bring out something different with. Mm. Whereas like, I feel like here we can get the kind of like, low, boomy, larger than life Galactus thing that I would want.
That's what Ralph's voice is, by the way. Yeah. Okay, so that happened last weekend. The other thing that happened last weekend, I'm currently in Planet of the Apes mode because you and I are kind of scrambling to catch up with this. Here's the thing. Both Robbie and I love all the Planet of the Apes movies. And so, like Mission Impossible, that was going to be one of our things where we do some Screensaver Plus episodes and some Screensaver episodes. I still think if you're listening to this in time, forward in time, we may get to some of this. So, you know, you never know. You, again, could be rolling your eyes you're listening. But here's the deal. Currently, as I'm recording, I just rewatched the first two Planet of the Apes films. I'm going to rewatch the third one today and then hopefully go to the new movie tonight or tomorrow night. I had a screener for last Tuesday, and I was in Charlotte, so I couldn't do it, which is a huge bummer. It's a huge bummer for me because I freaking love them, and I have some crazy bold takes on some of these films, some that you know I texted you about. And so if we have those episodes available, please go listen to them because
– man, I want to know the crazy the take that you sent me, I feel like was not bold from my perspective.
Okay,
but I want to know if there are other bolder takes within.
Well, don't you think in general of trilogies that are as consistent as that one, it goes unnoticed largely compared to – like – for how good those movies are, yeah. I think it should be talked about more, basically, which is my favorite place to be for this podcast, to be honest.
Yeah, I think that that's true. I do think that they are – like people don't know to give them the time that they should, I guess, because they're like they're long movies. They're kind of slow at times, especially the second two, like if you're not invested – it makes sense that they're Matt Reeves movies, that like the Batman is like,
yeah, has a similar vibe, like, kind of.
Yeah.
So like, dark, look, too.
Whenever I say it's kind of slow, this is coming from the guy whose favorite movie is Lord of the Rings. So yeah. That's not an insult.
The extended edition, which that
the
was
the only insult I can give a movie is it's too short.
Is that the other thing I saw, by the way? They're making a new Lord of the Rings movie. That's the other rumor.
They are. They're making a new Lord of the Rings film called The Hunt for Gollum.
Yeah, okay.
And it is starring and directed by Andy Serkis.
All right. Speaking of Andy Serkis, wow, Rob, it's all coming full circle.
Yeah, true, there you
go. With Caesar.
And he's directing, but it is executive produced by Peter Jackson and I think written by the writers of the original trilogy. So okay. I think...
Does that get you excited or are you now like, here we go?
I'm mostly excited. I think that it's at a point now where it can't really do anything to tarnish the legacy.
It's been so long.
Yeah, it's like it's not like it's going to go back and undo anything. I think what I'm a little bit nervous about is I just don't know what they're going to be pulling from. Like even the Hobbit movies, the stuff that wasn't there were a lot of things that didn't work, but I understood what Jackson was trying to do. Like he was trying to adapt things from elsewhere in either Lord of the Rings or the Silmarillion. And it just was all shoehorned in. But I at least appreciated that most of what he was doing, not all, but most like had a source in the material. And I'm not sure where he's digging into here. Because there are a couple of things that I think he could be doing, but we've got a long time until the movie comes out, and I'm sure that the script will go through multiple iterations. But I'm like tentatively excited. I think the bigger win there is that, like, I heard that they were green lighting these new Lord of the Rings movies, and I think I was afraid that they were going to try to do a full on reboot or recast, and that's what would have been a lot more troubling to me, just because I don't think that those are movies that you can top anytime soon.
Mm.
So I like that they're just playing around in that world a little bit more.
So going back to Planet of the Apes for a second, all four, well, I haven't seen the new one. It has good reviews, but I haven't seen the new one. But I think all four Planet of the Apes movies are going to be really good. The original trilogy, not the original, but the remade trilogy. Sorry, that was weird. The remade trilogy, all have above like 80%. It's fantastically consistent. And the new one now has like 85% is how it opened. So I can't wait for that. But the second one in particular is a masterpiece, in my opinion. I think it's one of the best movies in a while. Mm-hmm. And I got into an interesting conversation with Zach on Discord about 2014, the year. Did you realize that in that year, Robbie, just as an example, here's some of the ones he listed. That year had Winter Soldier and Guardians 1. So mm-hmm. that's got to be one of the best MCU years, if not the best MCU year, just based on what it did. Dawn of the Planet of the Apes, which I just said I think is one of the best movies of the last couple of decades. Days of Future Past, Interstellar, mm-hmm. Ex Machina, Godzilla, Birdman, Whiplash, Nightcrawler, Grand Budapest Hotel. Like,
yeah, there's Amazing a chance, Spider-Man 2.
There's a chance that 2014 is the greatest year for movies ever. There's a chance that 10 years ago. Just thought that was interesting. And I think that's probably part of the reason that that movie goes a little bit unnoticed, just a little bit, because that was the lineup of that year.
Yeah, yeah. Well, even the kind of blockbuster lineup, like I think like Ex Machina is one of my favorite movies, but I don't think that
it's not a rival.
I don't think. Yeah, well, and not that it was like any one of those movies was a rival, but I do think in a movie where you have such massive draws like these huge Marvel movies or like Days of Future Past, because like I remember when
and a Nolan
I was
movie.
Still living, yeah, like I was living in Nashville. I think I remember going to see Days of Future Past with Candace and our friend Seth.
Really?
Yeah, and I remember going to see like Interstellar with you. I remember going to see Winter Soldier and Guardians. We've talked about all that. But like, I don't think that I went and saw the second Planet of the Apes in theaters.
I can't remember where I saw it first either. I think I did see it in theaters. I think, was it Interstellar? You, me, Stephen, Matthew, Seth at the IMAX there. Okay, wow.
Those we went right before, it was like a kind of quasi like mini bachelor party. It was like right before my wedding.
Those were the days, man. What a theater experience that was. Holy crap. I sat in that exact same theater for Ghost Protocol with Steven, and that blew my mind, which was, by the way, why it was so fun to bring Steven full circle for my Mission Impossible Dead Reckoning episode on Screensaver last year, just because he was kind of us three founding fathers of the Mission Impossible. Yeah. Okay. So anyways, there is a lot going on. If you are, again, in the future listening to this, you may have, if you're a Friends from Work Plus Tier 2 or 3 subscriber, you may have some Screensaver Plus episodes. Potentially, this episode on a kind of overview of the remade Planet of the Apes, the first three, there's a chance that you're going to have a Screensaver main feed episode, maybe solo from yours truly, on the new Planet of the Apes. I am also working on editing a Screensaver main feed episode from Candace and Emily on Challengers, which is also getting rave reviews. So I'm excited to hear what they thought.
Yeah.
So that all could be out on Screensaver and Screensaver Plus. And I do want to say this is a good time to maybe look into Friends from Work Plus if you're interested in any of that stuff, because like our Planet of the Apes conversation will be on there for those tier two and tier three people. But also, as we've been saying, we've been just churning out these X-Men films as we go through that rewatch. I actually just today updated my rankings. For me, I'm at X2 as tier one, first ranking, then X1, then First Class, then The Wolverine, then X3, and then Origins Wolverine. So if you're interested in those, The Wolverine just came out last week, and then Robbie and I are recording our Days of Future Past episode really soon. So again, check out Friends from Work Plus. It's a good time to look into some of that stuff. But it just feels like from my end, even though not everybody out there is getting all of that, from my end, it's been a really busy Friends from Work season. You and I are recording multiple days this week, multiple days next week. It's just been, it's been crazy.
Yeah. And there's stuff that we're not even getting to do that we could.
Why do you got to bring it down like that? As I'm live from my Hilton Garden Inn in Charlotte.
Yeah. One day. We will talk about every movie.
I think I'd probably get tired of it if all I did was talk about like the new Winnie the Pooh film or whatever, you know?
Well, okay. Well, easy with Winnie the Pooh. I mean,
that was such a bad example because I like Winnie the Pooh. My daughter likes Winnie the Pooh and I'm into it. Why did I use that as an example? That was just a brain mess up. Okay. It's early. Here we go. X-Men 97, episode 9. We watched this. When did you watch it? I watched it the day it came out on Wednesday. It's now Friday that we're recording. This episode's coming out on a Monday.
Mm-hmm.
How was your first experience with the pre-finale?
So I was going to watch it Wednesday night. And then by the time I sat down, it was getting so late that I realized I would rather just watch it right before we record, or the night before we record. So I held off and watched Thursday night, last night, so it'd be fresh. So I'm still primed. I watched that, and I watched a little bit more of Days of Future Past. So, and then I went and read an X-Men comic before I went to bed. So I'm taking this thing seriously.
I saw online or on Discord, I can't remember, that last image of Wolverine being ripped apart with the metal, the animantium inside of him, is straight from a comic. I mean, literally, you could almost lay them on top of each other kind of thing.
Yeah, I remember I had this Marvel encyclopedia type thing when I was growing up that my mom got me from Books A Million. And it was like, I saw it last time I was home, and it's still there and like tattered. But I would just read through it over and over and over again. And it wasn't, I say encyclopedia, it was more of kind of like a walkthrough chronologically, like all the Marvel stuff that had come out from the 60s through like the 90s. And I remember that image and being so unsettled by that as like a 8-year-old. And I like had a nice little flashback when I saw the like, all the, because it looks, man, it's like some so
PTSD.
Brutal.
Some PTSD for Robbie there.
Yeah. A lot of stuff I did not understand at the time.
Don't tell me what happens in the comic, because I know Wolverine's still around. But, I mean, I would think that would be a way that you could kill him. And I'm fascinated they took that twist in this show.
Yeah. I am really, like, I'm loving more and more how much this show is combining various parts of the X-Men mythology. Like it's doing something that the original did in the 90s, but it's going beyond that, in that we never know like what it's pulling from or like when or why. And so it's like, I didn't know that we were heading towards that moment. And like, I recognized that moment, but I didn't see it coming. And that's something that we've always said the MCU does really well, like highlighting certain parts of stories and bringing them in, but where you won't expect them, so that it's honoring the original material, but not, it's not just like a, oh, okay, I'm going to see how they adapt X. Even like, remember it having elements of very modern X-Men stories, whereas most of what they've been pulling from are older classic, like 80s, 90s stories. And that was one that, because I didn't see it coming, I don't know what they're going to do with it. I assume in the same way that I assumed after Remember It, like that Wolverine will be back, and I know ways that that can happen. But I don't know. It creates some interesting areas for them to explore in the same way they did with Storm. If we did have a Logan that's like kind of like we had in the Wolverine movie that we watched recently, like that is stripped of the adamantium.
And then he gets it back right away, so who cares? One of our Discord listeners said Logan clearly had not seen Infinity War because he should have gone for the head. You never stab.
I thought about that too.
You never stab and then dialogue. Come on. Yeah. Villains, heroes. It's lesson number one. It's like stabbing 101 in college. You got to go for the head or stop talking about it while you're holding them.
But I think what was so impactful about that scene with Thanos, like whenever Thor puts an axe through his chest, you're like, yes. Whereas like with Magneto, you've kind of the whole season been treating him as a hero. So whenever Wolverine does stab him, you're not, it's not like a cheer moment. It's like a, oh wow, like this is how far we've gone down this road.
It had some really good Civil War vibes. Even the rogue comment of you're pulling your punches, or that's from Civil War, but she says something like, oh, you're fighting to kill or something.
Yeah.
Sugar. It's something like that. But yeah, I found myself, just as a fan of this series and not knowing the old ones and not knowing the comics, I found myself really conflicted. And I think that's what they want for this Civil War vibe. Like, I think they want you just to feel sad in general that it's come to this.
Yeah.
But I didn't really know. Yeah, my heart was torn. I didn't know who to pull for. So when Magneto loses his helmet and then Charles is roasting him, then you're kind of like, oh no, I don't know if you should kill him. He's trying to do something. And then Scott shockingly stops Charles. And then you're like, oh gosh, don't kill Charles. And then, but you're also like, I get it though, Scott. Like, Scott is so confused. Then out of nowhere, Wolverine stabs him. And you're like, oh gosh. And then the shredding image of Wolverine. So it's like,
yeah,
it's one of those things, exactly like you said, you're not really pulling for anyone. You're just kind of like, it's the Tony Stark after Cap walks away, you know, spitting out blood, going kind of like, how did we get here vibe, you know?
The whole vibe of that final battle, like, it's such a perfect, like, talking about Infinity War, like a perfect, like, penultimate chapter, you know, where it gives us, like, we get the whole suit up scene ahead of time, which I love that this episode puts all of them in the, for people that don't know, all of them in the costumes that those characters had for the most part when, like, the Uncanny X-Men relaunch back in the 70s happened, that really, like, reimagined and rejuvenated the whole franchise. That's what the entire X-Men original animated series was based on. So it like Cyclops's like fully covered head, you know, and like the visor instead of like the hair showing, Rogue's green outfit instead of the like normal yellow spandex, I guess.
My note also was just the classic suit rules. That's it.
Yeah. And the Wolverine like reddish brown suit, which is so great, which is now no longer making my shirt relevant. But all of that leading into the battle, I feel like it was a perfect, like, we're clearly moving towards the finale, but the pacing was so, like, exquisitely done here where it didn't feel like we were getting dragged along. And each moment, like, I never knew what was happening. I never knew, like, where things stood with Bastion, with Cable and Jean. Like, I don't know what's going on there.
Good point.
Do we think that Jean and Kate, like, are they both dead? Is one of them dead? Because we saw, like, that Flash and Cyclops seems to have seen something traumatic, and Jean is reaching out to him in a way where she's seemingly saying goodbye telepathically. Did you feel like there was any takeaway there?
No. Well, yes. I think you're right. Wild moment. Maybe they're leading to a thing where Jean is quote unquote dead, and then Phoenix is the next season or something. Or
yeah, but they did that. In fairness, it was a while ago, even within the series.
They did. Okay.
But so they would have to do something different with that. Now, again, in the comics, Jean dies and comes back as Phoenix like a million times. They even make that joke in the in the episode.
What was the joke about the suit that I interrupted you on? Did I miss a suit joke?
Oh, well, I think we talked about it last episode when they released the clip. When Scott throws Cable the suit to put on, and he's like, are we going to fight a battle or going to the circus? And Scott's like, what did you expect? Black leather? And it's the callback to the original X-Men joke. For those that have not seen that recently or don't remember it, that is like a famous joke in the first X-Men film from 2000 where Wolverine's like, they're nodding to the fact that they're two like it's too like adult and modern and cool to wear yellow spandex. So they wear something that's super normal and not at all dating.
Again, you got to stay leather outfits. Instead of saying for those who don't know, you got to say for Steve Rogers.
This that's true. I just don't. I don't have the like. I never go there instinctively.
Just it takes time. You got to condition yourself. And by the way, I totally remember catching that joke. That wasn't for me. That was for anyone else out there. I totally didn't forget about it. I didn't. All right. We'll be right back. Robbie, I love your Nerd Riot shirt you're wearing just because that is almost shot for shot from the exact same cowl and mask that we have in X-Men 97 Episode 9, the classic suit. I love it so much. I'm still dated here, but wearing my Mobius key lime pies here, obviously. Got to get that shirt.
That's still one of the best.
NerdRiot.shop, promo code friends from work. And I got a couple of messages from people who had been ordering stuff. Like someone just got the Remember It shirt. So thank you. Keep doing it. It helps us. We love that. And you get merch you love. Huge win. I don't have a ton else to say. I just love the crew getting back together. Feels kind of Ultron-esque, Age of Ultron. We're finally, like, remember like I told Storm. You? Yeah, like Storm's going to get her moment. Which is what I said. And so she gets like a cool introduction and then a huge shot of her flying and lightning coming down. And I thought just the intro of this episode was also fantastic in the way that they did put the team back together, partnered with the Newton Brothers score, which is just taking another step up. I love the choir work, man. So I think I'm a sucker for choirs. And so they have they talked about that Vienna choir. Uh-huh. And you really hear it, for example, when Magneto's showing up with the asteroid. And it's just fantastic. It makes everything so epic. It's the same reason why I love Natalie Holt using a big choir at the end of the He Who Remains track. And I don't even know what they're saying, but I love it. So anyways, the whole introduction, like the team getting back together, Storm getting a moment, saving Jubilee and Roberto, then them dialoguing, all paired with this kind of new age music score they have going, I thought was a great kickoff to the episode.
I thought that like as soon as it started, I made a note about the score. Because, I mean, the whole way through, but the Newton Brothers were doing some work on this episode.
Don't judge me. This is a safe space. I watched this episode twice. Why specifically does the world end in 12 hours? Why 12 hours? Like, I can't remember from last episode when Magneto did the electromagnetism pulse thing, the EMP thing. Why did they ever say it's like 12 hours, it's over?
So I don't feel like they said that in the episode preceding this, but I feel like...
Is it just metaphorical because people are all eating themselves alive? Kind of thing.
I think it's something to do with like the effect he's having on the magnetic poles. Like there's something with like, cause at first, like last episode I thought, it's just like a massive EMP. And so all of the electronics are now like inert. But I think that he did something here that they're saying if it isn't fixed or undone, like the planet, like, because they say something like the sun, when the sun sets, it's going to be like the final time or something.
So
I think it's some kind of planetary impact.
Like the Earth itself is going to disintegrate, the actual planet. And that's why he has the asteroid. He's going to rebuild a new Genosha with only X-Men on it.
So, yeah, I think so. And, okay, I found something that... Okay, I think that the like sci-fi science explanation here is that
I love this research.
He by disabling the magnetic field, I think that would stop the Earth from spinning and destroy the ozone layer, which then means that like half the world would be like frozen and the other half would get like radiation poisoning from the sun. And so I think it's just kind of like it would make for an immediate extinction level event. I don't know why 12 hours though.
Yeah, it takes time for the ozone layer to be destroyed, maybe.
Yeah, I do like, I mean, one thing that I thought was really impactful was the role of Charles in all of this, because I guess we're talking about the 12 hours and how extreme everything was. Like, there are a lot of conversations from the X-Men, from Magneto, about how Charles basically just like abandoned everyone. And I think what I love is that there's a, you know, from his perspective, he was on the verge of death. He had to go. So it's not like he meant to abandon everyone, but then once he was there, he could have come back and didn't. And so it's not like I think that Charles did something intentionally or even legitimately bad, but you do see from their perspective everything that's happened because he left, even down to like the news story breaking that he wasn't actually dead and the X-Men were hiding it and everyone now thinking that mutants were acting in bad faith. And all of that coming to a head with this moment between him and Magneto and the X-Men is like, it feels very poetic.
Yep.
And you're right. It reminds me of Civil War, even in the moment, like the moment in Civil War when Natasha turns on T'Challa at the last minute and he thinks that she's with her and she lets them go. That, like, I got those vibes from Cyclops stopping Xavier from taking over Magneto, when it's like the whole time Cyclops has been like so mad that he has to take orders from Magneto, that like he's such like a, he's still Xavier's guy. And so then here at the end for that to come full circle, there's a lot of like a lot of groundwork was laid throughout the entire season that made those moments hit as much as they did. And that's where like, I just, man, I continue to be amazed at how incredible the show is. Like mm-hmm. everything's just handled in a way that like, I don't know that any,
oh boy.
You're going like for episode, like beat for beat, I'm just trying to think if any Disney Plus show so far has been this consistent.
Okay, before we say anything more about that, really quickly, let me add on top of the like Magneto's speech when he shows up is that poetic Shakespearean type disagreement there on that like dock. Mm-hmm. And I loved every second of it. For some reason, it could have been cheesy or over the top, but the whole thing for me just felt so right. Maybe it was mm-hmm. the score too. Like the music underneath is adding the tension there. But then,
right,
like he made compelling points. Then to see Rogue and Roberto leave, and like the Roberto and Jubilee thing.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know. I thought that all worked. I think you're right. It's just it always comes down to that same conversation of, is this as consistently good at what it's trying to do,
right,
as anything? But for me, I don't think I'm ever going to be quite as into an animated X-Men thing. Like, I don't wake up as juiced as I did for WandaVision, Loki season 2.
Right.
Which would be the other two contenders, I think, to the most consistent all the way through. Mm-hmm. And you'd probably maybe not even say WandaVision because of the finale, but you would probably say Loki season 2. Like, there wasn't very many dips there. But
yeah,
weren't very many dips there. But
I think WandaVision, yeah.
What it is doing, though, is absolutely fantastic. And so I totally understand a 96 or 7% Rotten Tomatoes score, because for what it's attempting to do, which, by the way, we've said before, maybe not to the same degree, but like She-Hulk, for what it was attempting to do, was pretty freaking good. Now, you may not like what it's attempting to do, but it is mm-hmm. doing a good job of it. And so I would say, what is it this show has attempted to do? It has knocked it out of the park. I can't envision someone who's a diehard X-Men fan of the original series, being disappointed in any way with what they're doing. If you are into this kind of animated stuff, how could you not like it? For me,
right.
I don't wake up quite as juiced, but I've still loved watching it. I just don't have maybe the same like rush to the yeah. like 6 p.m. we're watching WandaVision tonight. You know, my wife and I have some friends over, whatever. I don't have that right. same thing, but that's just because it's animated, I think, and it's X-Men.
Yeah. No, I think I'm on the same page there. I think that what I've been so surprised by, like all over the last couple of years, as like the conversation has gone back and forth between like, you know, has Marvel lost its luster? Has it not? Is it all just like a sign of the times, whatever? Like, I'm not going to have that conversation
here
now.
Here we go.
But we have had a couple points where we've thought, you know, I wonder if this is going to be a moment that kind of turns the discourse around. And we've seen little bits of that. Like, I think Loki season 2 was that in a lot of ways. But as you and I have also discussed, there are a lot of people that I know would love Loki season 2 that just haven't even watched it yet. And so it did turn around the discourse for those that were watching, but I don't think it totally broke through. What's weird is this is the last project that I would have thought would have the kind of impact that it's had conversationally. But talking about something just doing what it's trying to do so well, like I've been getting so many texts from people that I have not heard from on Marvel stuff in forever that are just so into X-Men 97. And glued to it week to week. And in fairness, they're mostly people from my era of the 90s that grew sure. up on it. And so they're, you know, but still, there's a world where this just dropped and it was
for sure.
It was great. And no one really talked about it outside of like the core MCU fandom. And that's just I feel like this has been such a conversation piece since the first premiere.
I think it's a little more like Loki than maybe you're leading on. I don't know that the overarching culture has all turned its eyes to this. I think it's fully fulfilling the dreams of the people that were into this stuff already. But like my parents are never going to watch it, that kind of vibe, like my in-laws, et cetera.
Sure, sure.
But I do think that Loki season 2 and this, it's additive. And what I mean by that is I think – probably one of the driving forces of getting the overall culture back on the MCU is that MCU fans, the diehards who are still here, are as passionate on something. And I think it's going to like people will catch wind of it. Like, oh, MCU mm-hmm. fans were really stoked on Loki season 2. Oh my gosh, they loved X-Men 97. They must be on right. a heater. So now maybe I need to start checking it out. So I think eventually, like if Deadpool and Wolverine is yeah. a perfect follow-up, I think it will start turning for sure. But yes, back to not that conversation as much, just the doing what it's doing conversation. I've had people on social media, on Discord, say things like the following. X-Men 97 is the best thing that Marvel has created since Endgame. And while preference-wise, that is not at all the case for me, mm-hmm. I totally get it. I don't have a huge argument with that. If this is your thing, then I can see how that case could be made easily.
Right. I mean, I think it's in some ways like for you, like the Spider-Man video games would maybe be like a comparison where it's like, yes, it's not live action. So there are just some like there's a layer of it just not connecting in the same way that like a live action Spider-Man film would. But at the same time, it's like it's done almost perfectly in such a way that it like elevates it so sure. far above what I would normally expect like a video game to do. And I think that that's the way that I feel about this animated series, especially based on as someone that grew up on and has watched recently the entire 90s series, like this is just the ability to synthesize the best parts of that, but then also like hear we would never in the 90s series, because it was a kid's show, have gotten Wolverine's claws going through Magneto in that way.
See, I don't even fully know that, you know? Like, I never saw it, so I don't... I'm taking your word for it, but I believe you. There are a few things that are more adult, like where my wife and her sister are texting me saying, wow, that was brutal or gross. Right. And I'm like, it's an animated series. But yeah, there is a step up for sure.
It's well, and I love that they haven't been gratuitous about it. Like, it's not like they were like, oh, now we have like we have the reins and we can just do constant like grotesque violence, which is kind of something that like Invincible does. And I really love that in that show, but I wouldn't want that here.
Okay.
And so I feel like they reserve that enough to where the moments like that really hit. And all like, again, you know, remember it, which was just a really, it wasn't just the plot. It was the way it was executed where it feels very visceral. Like you see people that are bleeding. It's not just they're, you know, they're like scuffed up, which is kind of what you would do in like a kid's show. It's the synthesis in a lot of ways. I had two final things here.
Okay. And I have four really fast final things. So we'll see if any of my four are your two. Let's go.
Okay. Well, maybe you should go first then, because my first was just going to be kind of a state of the world. Like where do you think this episode leaves us? And
Okay. That's my final one.
Okay. Well, then maybe you hit your four. And then I wanted to have one more quick note on the Kevin Feige of it all, because of some of the news that's dropped since our last episode.
So mine are totally different. I'm talking rapid fire, one sentence. I just wanted to say the classic Sentinels was pretty dope.
I'd
like to see that he had dreams and nightmares and visions of those in the drawings, and then to see those kind of realized, really, really cool. Morph turning into Hulk, I didn't know that could be a thing, but that's pretty cool. Again, another MCU type shout out, a character I recognize doing Morph Smash instead of Hulk Smash. Thought that was fun. And then the one Easter egg.
By the way, do you think power level, like does he, when he transforms into the Hulk, does he have like all of the Hulk powers, and what are the limitations there? Like if he's Cyclops, does he have Cyclops powers, or is it only like form based like strength?
Right. And I've also wondered, like when those characters like Mystique also inherit sometimes the actual costume or look, like do you then inherit that tech? Like if he were to imitate Iron Man, Does he also get the suit with the like blasters and everything? Like, or is he just Tony Stark?
I mean, I guess so. I guess he would have to know, like he must have to have some idea of what he's morphing into. So I feel like he would have to know like how that tech works maybe to be able to like recreate it.
I think it would be cooler if he didn't get the tech. I don't have an answer to that, but if you can just turn into anything like a nuclear bomb, I think that's a little bit kind of lame and weird.
But what's the Captain Marvel line? He turned into a file cabinet?
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, what does he say back? I mean, I guess, but why would I?
Like, why would I want to turn into a filing cabinet?
Lastly, and I think he does have Hulk strength. I think he does. I think that was the point of it. Because, I mean, he was popping Sentinel's heads off with his Hulk smash.
Yeah, true.
The last thing, and I caught this Easter egg, and I'm not sure if I'm a genius or I'm overthinking it or I just have missed the dialogue online, but there's one shot of DeMeo's diner. Is that a shout out? Okay, there's a diner, says DeMeo's diner, and something crashes into the sign. So it's only like a second. I had to pause it, and it's DeMeo's diner. Surely that's a Bo shout out, right?
Oh, yeah, it's got to be.
Which is
really
fun.
That's nice. I like that.
Yeah. So those are my three things. And the fourth thing, which we'll do in a second here, is just kind of setting up the finale. So tell me the Kevin Feige thing, and then let's set up the finale.
Yeah. So I just, because we're kind of talking about the different projects, and there have been various stories like this, but Empire, in conjunction with releasing a lot of new stills and info for Deadpool and Wolverine, which have been really fun to see. They've also released some great quotes from Feige and Co. And just for people that don't follow the stuff, I thought they might want to know that they are between like Kevin's side of things and Bob Iger's side of things, really, really like hammering out this approach of less is more. And so from what I can tell, it seems like not only is that going to mean that they cap projects at like, I think 2 shows a year is what they're saying they want the max to be, and 3 movies a year will be the max, which is much more on par with like the pacing that we were used to in the Infinity Saga. But also what I like and what I think is relevant here with 97, I don't know if you saw this, but Feige had this statement about one kind of owning that last year did not go very well for them. Like just the conversation around it was not what they would have hoped. But then two, saying that he's feeling more and more comfortable in the current status quo because he's so used to operating in the underdog zone. Like he's talked about how with Iron Man, that was always like they started off with it being a long shot with, I mean, it was kind of like the Hail Mary of that, betting the entire IP on that one movie, which we've talked about. And he talked about how like in the time since Endgame, it's been such this like, is Marvel going to drop the ball? And then, Marvel dropped the ball or whatever. It was like waiting to see if they would fail. Whereas now he's kind of seeming to be rejuvenated by this idea that it's theirs to win back. And I say all that because I think the significance of X-Men 97 dropping after a lot of these stories have come out, a lot of these statements where Marvel's talking about shifting their approach. We talked about that like Daredevil article a while back. I think that the timing is really important for them to do something that is the first project that's been out in a bit, for it to be so great and for it to be thematically leading into Deadpool and Wolverine. I think it's very intentional, and I think it's really important in fulfilling what they are trying to accomplish, like on the Marvel Studios side.
I love that. Anytime one of the actors is also in a new project and they do the media rounds, they also always get asked about their time with Marvel at some point. So during Oppenheimer, you know, RDJ gets a lot of quotes out about Iron Man and would he ever come back? And so that's when you see those news. And then recently I've also been seeing news now because of Furiosa with Chris Hemsworth. And so he's now talking, and with Vanity Fair, I think it is, or Empire or whatever, about Thor and how he feels like he owes fans a Thor 5. And so like,
there's been a ton of news like that. Yeah.
Yeah, exactly. Exactly. That's my point. Is this kind of just, it's churning now, it's rolling. Okay. As we close this episode, the thing that I want to put out to Marvel, and the episode's already finished, it's already uploaded, so I can't do anything about it, is I think for me, it would be really, really fun if there is not a huge resolution in 2 days. I'm okay with them stopping it, and it could still be really moving, but what if you know you're going to make another season, what if like Bastion wins this season? Or what if they can't defeat him? Or what if Logan is actually dead? Or what if, you know, yada, yada, yada. That would be the twist, I think, that would fully get me in. There are some of our listeners that are concerned it's going to end on a cliffhanger and blah, blah, blah. And I that doesn't concern me. That excites me. My favorite thing was Infinity War, the ending. Because for a year, I was on pins and needles of, oh, my gosh, what are they going to do? Mm-hmm. If they wrap this and they beat Bastion and Mr. Sinister and everybody survives and it's like there's a new adventure in season 2, it loses a little bit of its shine for me. One of the winning factors is when this can continue on. And I've pleaded for Marvel to keep some villains like Arthur Harrow or Gore, and it hasn't happened. And I think it would be fun to have some main A-lister villains hang around. And maybe Doom is more involved next season. That's fine. But just – I would love a non-super resolved ending. That's all I'm saying.
I'm with you. I think – and there's a way to do that that doesn't feel like you're stopping a season halfway through. Like they can – there are ways to end the first season and – it feel like a conclusion to that and also a bit of a cliffhanger. And I think that's what I'm hoping for. Like, I don't want it to, there is a lot going on, even just relationally. Like, even if they do defeat Bastion, I think that they have to allow things like whatever's just happened to Wolverine, or like the rift between the X-Men and Xavier. Like, that kind of has to be left out there, because if they resolve all of that in 30 minutes, I mean, I say that maybe they could and it would be incredible. That seems to me like it would get into that territory that we're always a little wary of with these finales, where they just try to like suddenly do way too much and it gets a bit overstuffed. So I think I'm with you there.
We'll have to find out. I have to go to work, everyone. I'm running late. I'm yes. late to work for this podcast, for all of you out there. I am excited to see, because of the way the release schedule is. Like I said, I think it's on just a night or two from now. So depending on when you watch, we'll be back here next week talking about X-Men 97, episode 10, the finale. And like I said, check out Friends from Work, all that stuff that we mentioned. Well, Friends from Work Plus, sorry, excuse me. Check out Friends from Work Plus, all that stuff we mentioned. A lot of fun stuff going on. My mind is racing with all the stuff we are doing, could be doing, and will be doing as we're building up to Wolverine and Deadpool. Wow, it's early. Deadpool and Wolverine. Thank you for listening. We love you all. We'll see you next time right back here on Friends from Work.
Live on DAZN Worldwide, May 2nd and 3rd, Garcia versus Romero and Canelo versus Skull. Friday from 6 p.m. Eastern, Garcia returns in a history-making Times Square takeover. 24 hours later, Saturday from 7 p.m. Eastern, King Canelo faces undefeated Skull for the undisputed crown. May 2nd and 3rd, a knockout weekend of boxing. Pick one or go all in for only $90, exclusively on DAZN. Buy now at DAZN.com/boxing.